Adric. Adric, how much loss can one man take? How much pain caused by loss can one man withstand? I don't know the answer, and I don't know how to find out the answer without suffering more loss, and that's not something that I want to do in spite of all this loss. You remain, Adric, living in my home, eating my food, sneaking, snooping, surviving. And who can blame you? You lost in a time that's not your own, in a reality that's really not your own. Unaware of what you really are, you sneaking, snooping little man. Before we get going, before I start to insult you too much, we need to take a moment of respect to honor our fallen companion, Sir Barristan the Bold, the bravest and most courageous chinchilla in the history of chinchillas. He's gone. It's part of history now, and he deserved a better fate. And I only hope that he enjoyed his journeys through space and time here in Action Pack Studios. Adric, I'm not going to say that you were an asshole to him, but there were times that you were an asshole to him. To Sir Barristan the Bold, the bravest, the most courageous chinchilla, the greatest chinchilla in the history of chinchillas. Daisy Bell is not with us today either, but she's fine. She's upstairs. She just doesn't like to come down here, and that's okay, because she doesn't contribute much. Although I think maybe she contributes more than Adric does. He's smiling. Adric is smiling. Adric, when last we recorded, it was shortly after Christmas, and we produced our initial review of Peter Capaldi's final story, Stephen Moffat's final story, Twice Upon a Time. But it seems that instead of calling it our initial review, we should have just called it our complete review, or perhaps a better name, our complete thoughts and review. Our complete initial review with follow-up thoughts and a secondary review all in one episode for Twice Upon a Time. We should have called it something like that because it ended up being the only episode about Twice Upon a Time and the last episode that we put up at all. And yet, you're still here. And the deal was, you live in my house, you eat my food, you sneak around, you snoop around, you hide, you contribute to the podcast, and yet you haven't. And it's been months, months and months since we put up an episode. And where have you been? What have you been doing to help? Planning. He wrote planning in red crayon. He's been planning. I'm not going to call Adric a liar, but I will say, even though I don't want to say it, Adric, there were times that you were a real asshole to Sir Barristan. Not all the time, but there were a few times. So if he's in chinchilla heaven right now, it's me that he's thinking of and not you. So what do we speak of today? What else is there to speak of? Series 11 is upon us. A complete revamping of Doctor Who. And that's great, Adric. That's really, really great. Okay, here we go. That's great, Adric, a Doctor Who podcast. Adric, what have you been up to since the last time we spoke? The reason I ask, Adric, it functions as the best segue I can come up with to tell you and our audience what I've been up to. I've been stewing. Yes, stewing. Sitting in the dark, in silence, whenever it's possible for me to sit in the dark in silence. And many times while I'm sitting in the dark in silence, I find I have a yearning to go back to the beginning and experience all of it again. But hand in hand with this yearning is a sense of sadness. And it's that sadness that prevents me from watching what I want to watch. Adric, the greatest run of Doctor Who is being treated like radioactive waste. And the knowledge of where the program seems to be headed. When I say I yearn to go back to the beginning, I mean that I wish to return to the beginning of the best act of the modern era. And the best act of the modern era began with the time of the Doctor. Today I mean to speak very little of Matt Smith and his era as Doctor Who, but I do deliver a disclaimer that I can at any time delve too deep into my own thoughts and communicate them without an ability To moderate by necessity, I will say for sure that Stephen Moffat took the reins by completely transitioning Russell T. Davies' blueprint for the modern era, which was a borderline action-adventure sci-fi program, into an all-out action-adventure sci-fi program. And as different as that sounds from what Doctor Who had always been, this blueprint was not untrue to what Doctor Who is, or was, and would be. In fact, Series 5 is considered by many to be the greatest of the modern era. Adric and I do not agree with this, but we will put it in our top 3, maybe 4. But it is, without a doubt, the greatest series of the Matt Smith era, and it features Stephen Moffat's greatest writing for the first half of his run at the helm. However, the action-adventure sci-fi program that Series 5 was became very uneven in Series 6, and it evolved, or devolved, if you will, Adric, into near camp in Series 7. Why do I bring this all up? When this episode is a preparatory exercise for the oncoming storm that is Series 11. Well, Adric, I will get to it, so you have patience. This may sound like, duh, but it feels very much that Stephen Moffat's idea of what a modern Doctor Who television program should be was what Series 5 was. The problem being, that idea and vision really didn't pan out to more than a 13-episode run. It feels very much that Matt Smith was Stephen Moffat's idea of what the modern Doctor should be. Fit perfectly in Series 5. In subsequent series, Moffat's vision and idea of the Doctor and Doctor Who, as it was going into his first production block, did not feel nearly as fresh or fun or organic. All the same, no matter how choppy the writing was or how overreaching the stories in which Matt Smith was placed were, Moffat never lost faith or focus in putting Matt Smith over as the Doctor for the modern era. And as evident in The Day of the Doctor, putting him right alongside Tom Baker as the Doctor that audiences will think of when thinking of Doctor Who. Matt Smith's performance and standing in all of Doctor Who history, not on the table for discussion. Adric, put it to the side. Table it. Thank you. Smith's decision to leave Doctor Who after 3 series and 5 or 6 Christmas specials and the 50th anniversary celebration, it was the best thing to happen for Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who. Without the 11th Doctor, Moffat was no longer so concerned or focused putting Matt Smith over as the Doctor to best all Doctors. And instead, he became focused on what he should have been focused on from the beginning, making the best Doctor Who program that he was capable of making. And it turns out, he was capable of making very good Doctor Who. The result, in my opinion, and I'd like to believe the opinion of most all longtime viewers of Doctor Who, as well as a great many of Doctor Who fans that enjoy rewatching stories and can appreciate the action-heavy stories introduced by Davies, improved upon by Moffat, for so many reasons beyond the action and adventure. The result was the single greatest run that any showrunner or lead writer or script editor had with Doctor Who in any era. And I am also very confident that even if the Peter Capaldi run is not greatly appreciated now like it should be, it will be looked on with great love and greater appreciation as the years go by. But Adric, look at me and listen to the words that emerge from my mouth. Listen, please, Adric, seriously, make note that I said the single greatest run, and I did not say the single most successful run. Yes, right, that's right. Well, success, I guess it does mean how you define success, but in this case, I define success as whether or not the network upon which the program you are the star of decides to do the opposite of everything you've done and been written to do on said program once you are no longer the star of the program in question. Success, as it were, as it was. Adric, don't start. As I was saying, I've yearned to go back to the time of the Doctor and from there experience the Peter Capaldi Doctor from start to finish. This is all to say that Series 8, 9, and 10 are the best of what Doctor Who can be in today's world of on-demand media, instant gratification, mobile entertainment, and attention deficit disorder, like Adric has. I, Shawnee Wan Kenobi, was a Netflix Doctor Who fan. I knew of Doctor Who. I knew of regeneration. I knew the program had been both British and on the air for a billion years. But that's all I knew. At the behest of a friend whom behested me for several years to give Doctor Who a try, I caved and I watched Rose. And Rose didn't impress me enough to continue on. But luckily, a short time later, I found free time and a lack of programs to watch on my queue. So I gave The End of the World a chance, and I first building in that story hooked me enough to continue on through The Ninth Doctor with the knowledge that the David Tennant years were considered by many among the greatest science fiction television of the 21st century. Okay, Patrick, I'm getting to it, aren't I? You know, or you should know why I have to explain all this, because I explained the same thing to you, all of it. Being a Netflix Doctor Who fan in 2013 meant I was able to binge my viewing of series 1 through 6. I used the word binge, but it was not a binge speed that one would use for an American program such as Breaking Bad or The Wire. The mythology and the narrative of those American series are such that each episode reveals more and throws another log onto the fire. Metaphorically, obviously. Doctor Who is less cliffhangers than American episodic television. More standalone stories. It's more of a feeling. It's more of a good time. With friends that aren't really so much friends as they are characters in a television show that you feel you know and would be friends with if you were also a character in the same television show. Thus and so, Series 7 had aired when I was caught up to it. So I purchased Series 7, and I worked my way through it as quick as I could, but not quick enough to appreciate the Day of the Doctor as much as I should have. Once I was done with Series 7, and I rewatched the Day of the Doctor, I was able to view live the time of the Doctor. And from there, I would have said David Tennant was my Doctor throughout my binge. And for a few stories into the new Peter Capaldi era, I would have said the same. But at the end of Dark Water, Death in Heaven, having experienced the 12th Doctor as it happened and appreciating Series 8 for the brilliant writing that it is, by the end of Death in Heaven, I knew that Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor became, was, is, always will be my Doctor. We, Adric and myself, though Adric has very little to offer as far as words or thoughts or sounds, we are taking the long way around to reach my point. Adric, sorry, I woke you up. I don't know how you felt. It doesn't matter. Adric, do you know what the BBC is? The British Broadcasting Company. It is the network, a public one, not much different than what the Public Broadcasting System, or PBS, once was in the United States. I'm not implying, Adric, mind you, that you know what PBS is or that you are even paying attention to anything I'm saying. I guess I'm just hoping some of the things I say to you stick with you so that you become a better person, or at least so that I can say that I tried to do my part in making you a better person, seeing that it is less and less likely that you will ever leave my house. The BBC is a public media company, but Adric, do not mistake it for being a company that produces content for the public consumption first and foremost. Perhaps it was at one point, but I doubt it. It is first and foremost a company, and it is directed by individuals that focus first and foremost on the success of their own individual career in television and radio. They focus secondly on the success of the BBC as a company, because that goes hand in hand with their individual success. Thirdly, maybe, they focus on the quality of the content that is being transmitted. I've done research, Adric. I've read things. As far as That's Great, Adric, a Doctor Who podcast, can tell, the major difference in the BBC of 1963 that began transmitting Doctor Who and the BBC of 2018 that is set to transmit the 37th series overall of Doctor Who is the means of revenue, including the licensing fees paid by the British themselves. And perhaps most importantly, as far as Doctor Who is concerned, the continually emerging importance of the international market for BBC-produced programming. I just mentioned a moment ago, I know you weren't listening, Adric, so I'll say it again, the British pay a license fee in order to view BBC programming. This license fee is labeled as a tax, quote-unquote. And as of April of 2018, it works out to £150, which is a British currency, Brexit aside, the euro aside, £150 per year. There are a few ways for the British to pay this license fee, or tax, quote-unquote, and the six-month option looks like the best, which works out to £24 payment per month for 6 months, spread out over 12 months. That's £12 per month, as it were. Essentially, public programming in England costs people that want to view it basically the same as a subscription to Netflix or the Hulu plan that has no commercials. That revenue goes back to the maintenance of the BBC and to the BBC's growth. To supplement this revenue and to make sure that the BBC continues to grow, we have the strictly commercial division of the BBC, which was BBC Worldwide. It was BBC Worldwide that delivered BBC America and BBC Canada to viewers in North America. BBC Worldwide was founded in 1979 during the Fourth Doctor era. Its main function was to sell BBC programming and some non-BBC British programming abroad. Basically, monetizing BBC content. As of 2012-2013, right in the middle of the Matt Smith era of Doctor Who, the five BBC brands that made up over a quarter of the BBC's international sales were Doctor Who, Top Gear, which is the car racing show, Adric, I think, I never really watched it or care about it, or cars or racing. Strictly Come Dancing in the US is Dancing with the Stars, the program everybody's mom watches. Also, the archive of BBC Natural History programming called BBC Earth. And finally, a travel brand called Lonely Earth, which has since been sold off completely. So make no mistake. Again, this is the second mistake I'm asking you not to make, Adric. Sure, you're going to make it. I have no faith in you as a human or a companion or tenant. But make no mistake, as far as the international consumption of BBC programming, in particular, specifically Doctor Who, it was Stephen Moffat and Matt Smith that saw the huge growth that made Doctor Who an international smash success. Maybe that's a bold statement, as the classic era of Doctor Who was a popular program throughout the world, and the Russell T. Davies produced series are beloved by all who know Doctor Who. But be it timing or product, most likely a combination of both, Series 5 and even Series 6 made Doctor Who an international commodity with a large worldwide market for the division of BBC whose sole purpose is to find revenue for original BBC programming. Doctor Who in 2012 was a key brand. It was science fiction crack cocaine. Adric, I know in my heart that you are not keeping up. I'll ask you, are you keeping up with everything I'm saying to you? And you'll ignore me. Right. Yes, that's fine. Use the Game Boy. It's fine. It's fine. It's great. That's great. It's great, Adric. 2018, BBC Worldwide is no more. As of April 2018, BBC Studios, which was the production division of the BBC that produced the non-news programming, in itself became a private company. The BBC remains as a public television and radio entity. BBC Studios, however, merged BBC Worldwide to become a stronger beast hunting down revenue. Revenue, which will go back to the BBC. Does it seem unlikely that an immediately gigantic international television and content producer would exist solely to supplement taxes, quote-unquote, collected from television-viewing citizens of the British Empire? Indeed, there is something super fishy within all that, but I am not creating an internet audio program that investigates the BBC and BBC Studios. So the question I have to ask myself, or find the answer to give to Adric and you guys, how does all of this bullshit come back to Doctor Who and the end of the Stephen Moffat, Peter Capaldi era of the program? Patience. BBC Studios produces non-news programming and sells this content internationally. However, as a private company, BBC Studios is able to hire other studios to produce content that it wants to have produced, which would be illegal if it was not a private company. Essentially, so that Adric might understand it if he could focus on something long enough to understand it, Dancing with the Stars is an American adaptation of Strictly Come Dancing, which got the BBC paid in licensing fees. With the creation of BBC Studios, an American production company can be hired by BBC Studios to create an American audience-focused program, and the revenue created by the program would return to BBC Studios instead of a simple license fee. which most likely is not at all simple. Does that mean that BBC Studios is going to hire an American television company to create an American Doctor Who? Definitely not. At least, not yet, and hopefully, never, or at the very least, not until long after I'm dead, and Adric, my good friend, has finished devouring my corpse, as it is a fact that he cannot conceive of or create a meal for himself. Nay, Adric and I believe that lesser-known BBC properties and future BBC properties may follow the road that leads to immediate American adaptation or complete American production. But Doctor Who, as it is in 2018, is already a tremendously large success and established brand for BBC worldwide, and it is already a well-known and profitable brand in America. However, with the emergence of BBC Studios, the continued success of Doctor Who, and perhaps more importantly, the need for more success, bigger growth in the Doctor Who brand, is absolutely vital. BBC Studios will still produce the program, but the changes from Series 10, the last Stephen Moffat produced series, the last with Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, to Series 11, and the first Chris Chibnall produced stories, the changes are tremendous. Not foremost, but first, is the change in approach to the pre-production of Doctor Who. Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat both commissioned writers to contribute stories for their program. Chris Chibnall, who was one of those writers, not a very good one, but one of them, has, as Series 11 is in post-production or possibly completely ready to transmit, approached the stories of his first series of stories the same way that many American television production companies approach theirs, with a writer's room. Yay! Chibnall very likely has his own stories for which he will get credit. And it may be that individual writers, other than Chibnall, will get credit for stories that they may write start to finish. But as stated by Chibnall himself and in reference to it being one of the major changes that he wished to bring to the program, when he was interviewing with the BBC, the writer's room was the direction he wished to take the story craft in. An example of the RTD Moffat approach would be Jamie Matheson would write a story to Stephen Moffat's specifications and deliver a teleplay that Moffat may or may not make minor or extensive changes to. The story is signed off on and put into production. Chris Chibnall will go to BBC Studios every day with his team of writers who, by the way, Adric, audience, are all new writers to Doctor Who, with not a powerhouse or well-known television writer to note. This writing team of Chris Chibnall's will sit around at a table with coffee and Chris Chibnall's favorite snacks and order Mexican food and brainstorm narratives for the 13th Doctor. Another change, which is quite huge as well, is the change in the night of transmission from Saturday, which has been the home of Doctor Who since its return in 2005, to Sunday, which, at least in America, is home to the big guns of television programming on basic networks, cable networks, and premium cable networks. Perhaps this change never occurred to the BBC before, or perhaps the BBC never believed that Doctor Who could compete with programming on Sunday nights. Though, Adric, between you and me, I doubt this is true, as the BBC may have been aware of American broadcasting schedules, but not likely to base their programming around it. And it is not necessary that the same is true for the British Empire. What night and time that Doctor Who airs on is certainly not a Chris Chibnall decision to make or to worry about. This change, while probably made in hopes that more people will be in front of their televisions worldwide, to That's Great Adric, a Doctor Who podcast, it seems a change made for the sake of change to differentiate Series 11 from those that came before it. Series 11 will consist of 10 stories and a Christmas special. This is 2 less episodes than the Capaldi era, and 3 less episodes than the Matt Smith, David Tennant, and Christopher Eccleston eras. This decision likely goes hand in hand with the interesting decision to use Cook and Angenou anamorphic lenses. You don't know what I'm talking about, Adric. These lenses are expensive and will create a more cinematic look for the program, so less episodes requires less production blocks, which require less use of more expensive equipment. Less episodes also means less chance of a mid-series slump episode and less chance for viewers to tune out or get bored. Less episodes also means less writing, which I'm sure Chris Chibnall hopes will mean better quality writing throughout. I know I hope that. I also know I'm not confident in Chris Chibnall's writing, even if there was just 3 stories this season, or 2 stories this season, or 1 feature-length story this season. Other changes put in place exclusively for the Chibnall-Whitaker era are a purposely more diverse on-screen cast, more diverse production team, more diverse writers, and more diverse directors. Chris Chibnall and producers Matt Stevens, who worked with Stephen Moffat, and Sam Hoyle, whom I don't know from a hole in the wall, together made this decision so that one of the most lucrative programs, both at home and internationally, could reflect the diversity of the viewers it hopes to both maintain and to entice, and also to grow. A new logo for Doctor Who was created, and although the same thing happened when the Stephen Moffat era began, this new logo has been unbelievably aggressively placed throughout all Doctor Who media and merchandise. It's crazy, and I don't think I like it too much. Doesn't matter. The final change is the exit of Murray Gold as composer for the program. Gold has been with Doctor Who since it returned in 2005. And frankly, he's responsible for creating iconic pieces that are able to rival even the program's 55-year-old main title theme and all its variations throughout the years. Murray Gold, a white guy, was succeeded by Segun Akinola, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing. Akinola is more than qualified for the gig as he has feature films and television programs already in his resume. Murray Gold's time as composer was due to end. He reinvented himself with Stephen Moffat's tenure, but 10 series and like 16 or 17 specials are enough for any man to reach a plateau of greatness and slip. A new composer is necessary for a new era, especially when considering that the BBC is making many changes and allowing the production team to make so many changes themselves. Considering the unofficially official mandate for diversity on both sides of the camera, as well as Chris Chibnall's personal heroic desire to bring less experienced talent into the Doctor Who production, Segun Akinola, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, fits like a glove that fits a hand perfectly, like a mitten. So, Adric, I guess that's it. Those are all the changes to speak of. Or, at least, all of the big changes. I'm sure I can think of more changes that are going to be obvious or possibly welcome to my favorite television program, but nothing else really jumps out at me at the moment. How about you, Adric? Can you think of anything? You're nodding your head, but you're not saying anything. So what does that mean? You still aren't saying anything. So I can't tell if you're nodding your head in agreement that you can't think of anything, or if you're nodding your head that you can think of a change to the program that I'm missing, and that is pretty important. Okay, he's writing with his red crayon. Okay, all right, Adric, how dare you imply that I missed a big change to Doctor Who? Okay, I read up on this, you know, I receive text message notifications whenever there is the most mundane piece of news or information relating to Doctor Who, so I don't see a scenario in which you, Adric, who I don't even know if you can read, are aware of a big change to the production of the program, and I'm not. And also, Adric, no offense, but the behavior you've displayed since showing up at my doorstep really paints you as an imbecile. What? What? No, what did you just say? You said something a second ago. What did you say? The words, Adric, What were the damn words that you spoke, the sounds that came out of your mouth? Adric, what were they? Oh, well, yeah. All right. So you're right. I'm not going to say you're wrong because you're right. So I'm not going to lie because I'm not a liar, Adric. But I don't think that's something I forgot. I think it is something I just didn't talk about yet. Look, there's no scenario in which you're correct and I'm not correct. So even if I have to go back and edit this entire section out, there's no way that anyone will believe this slip up happens. So play your Game Boy before I call somebody to have you taken away. Thank you. Okay, so the last change, which is pretty huge, I can't even classify it per se as a change. This is more a complete reimagining of Doctor Who, and it has more of an effect on the history and continuity of the over half a century old program than any decision made by any showrunner or script editor or executive producer or head writer that's been made before. It was a decision that I thought would result in a split in the fandom, which thankfully it has not. It was a decision that I thought would be met with much more anger and disappointment, which thankfully it has not. I will go so far as to say that from the point of view of an American viewer and fan of Doctor Who, moi, it was a decision that had to be made. It was also a decision that had its way paved for by the second half of Stephen Moffat's run. Because despite him being pressured or made to answer for why he did not cast a woman as the Doctor, despite all that, it wasn't time for a female Doctor yet. I'm not sure if I find it just plain odd or if I am dismissing something that should be more deeply analyzed, but the reality that Jodie Whittaker has yet to appear in her first story and has already ignited and seemingly united the casual Doctor Who fan alongside with the brand new Doctor Who fan, alongside a fair amount of established Doctor Who fans in a way that hasn't been seen before in the program's history. When one takes a moment to consider Jodie Whittaker's reveal as the new Doctor, it's ironic. Yes, there was a hoo-ha. Of course there was a hoo-ha. There will always be a hoo-ha with any new Doctor for as long as the program is on the air. However, Jodie Whittaker's official reveal to the public during a commercial break for essentially an ancient annual tennis tournament played on grass was far less fanfare than Doctor Who Live, The Next Doctor, the television special that delivered the announcement of Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor. The 12th Doctor and Peter Capaldi, an actor and a doctor, that the BBC seems to be pinning viewership slips and weak AI index scores upon. Never mind that Peter Capaldi was the greatest portrayal of the Doctor in the modern era, and never mind that the 12th Doctor is the version of the Doctor for the modern era, not Matt Smith's 11th Doctor, and the 12th Doctor is the closest that the program will ever come to the modern era equivalent of the 4th Doctor. All of those observations that I hold as fact are meaningless at the altar of viewership, AI index, and revenue. Mayhaps amidst this talk of the BBC, of revenue, and of international brands, politics and gender equality will best be introduced. Mayhaps, on the other hand, it would be wiser for Adric to stay silent and for me to follow his example. Mayhaps it is a thoroughly bad idea for That's Great Adric, a Doctor Who podcast, to make any commentary at all on politics or gender equality, as it is most likely that any commentary made by a youthful-looking and very, very young, middle-aged American white man on the subject will range from wrong due to lack of life experiences to wrong due to socioeconomic position. Be that as it may, I'm going to talk about politics and gender equality. Adric, let's do it. Let's get one thing straight. I don't want to associate the Me Too movement that began in earnest in October of 2017 with the casting of Jodie Whittaker as the 13th Doctor, which occurred in midsummer of 2017, several months before the Harvey Weinstein scandals were truly brought to public conscience. As closely related as the movement and Whitaker's casting may be portrayed or understood to be now, I see Me Too as a movement focused on justice for victims of sexual predators and harassment, while the casting of Jodie Whittaker and the idea of making the doctor a woman was a decision focused on empowerment and equality. If the success of Doctor Who internationally in 2012-2013 was the result of unintended timing between the program's availability on Netflix, the improved production that came with Series 5, the smooth transition between the Davies-Tennant era and the Moffat-Smith era, which is the Davies-Tennant era, at least, still seen as the height of Doctor Who storytelling by the majority of casual fans, and the vast improved availability of the program throughout the world, then the successful casting decision of Jodie Whittaker, and the over-the-top excitement among fans both casual and extreme, is also a result of timing. I say that with no intention of disrespecting the excitement among those who are excited by Jodie Whittaker, or to those who are excited by the excitement of those who are excited by Jodie Whittaker, or those whom already celebrate the 13th Doctor as the epitome of inclusion, the epitome of equality, and the epitome of gender rights in both the science fiction television genre, on television in general, and as a champion of choice in the real world. Yes, Jodie Whittaker, the 13th Doctor, Chris Chibnall's choice. Before a single story has aired, already she is a worldwide champion and symbol for LGBTQ community, for little girls, for not so little girls, people on the fringe, people oppressed. I don't think I'm making any of this up, but what I'm saying is, Chris Chibnall, you have a lot of responsibility to write the 13th Doctor correctly. A lot is riding on what you do. Personally, I don't have any faith in you. It is so important that Jodie Whittaker has taken on the mantle for all of these things I speak of, and for myself, and speaking for Adric, whom can't speak or think of anything important. Learning more about Jodie Whittaker through interviews and profiles, as well as having already seen the talent she has in previous performances, I have no doubt that there is no one more deserving of this role than her. It's like she was meant for it. There is also a big part of myself that is proud that the Doctor, my favorite television character, and a character that has reinvented himself so many times already, has now become a living symbol of equality and the LGBTQ community and minorities throughout the world. Pressure, Chibnall, pressure. The timing, Adric, the timing. BBC marketing department is using a tagline it thinks is very, very clever. It's about time. It's about time. It's about time. This is the tagline for Series 11. And you know what? It is clever. It's clever if you haven't watched Doctor Who since the 10th Doctor and Rose reunited in Journey's End. It's clever because it has a double meaning. It means the program itself is a sci-fi program about time travel. It's about time. But it also means that the BBC is aware that a female doctor was long overdue and the crusty, stuffy, unwatched, effing genius of the PCAP's run is gone forever. And it's about time. Look, I've been reading a bit here and there, as it were. Adric, he's on the Game Boy. Me Too is so powerful of a movement that it is not confined to the United States alone. Nay, 'tis not. Like a female doctor, the idea behind Me Too was birthed a long time ago. Like a female doctor, Me Too has become strong throughout the world because it is the right time. But the similarities, methinks, basically end there. Jodie Whittaker was cast as the Doctor because the new Doctor Who production team felt it was a decision that was long overdue and one that had to be made in order for the program to keep with the times and the culture in which it wants to be viewed. Chris Chibnall, Matt Stevens, and anybody else at the BBC that championed this decision did so for all the right reasons. Maybe not Chibnall, but everybody else did them for the right reasons. And they believed that casting another white man, young or old, as the Doctor would betray the audience that was introduced to Doctor Who through Netflix, which is a huge part of its audience in 2018. And this is the audience that knows the transitioned regeneration of Missy so much better than they know the Master, if they know John Sims' portrayal of the Master at all. It is a new world for Doctor Who, and even myself, even though I am not as familiar with the classic era as I would like to be, I so much appreciated Easter eggs and callbacks and references that Stephen Moffat made to the show's history, basically in every story he was responsible for transmitting. But this idea of appreciating Doctor Who's history and adding to it and keeping it swirling around the pool, so to speak, is that something people say? Adric, he's eating chocolate or something. I don't know what he's doing. Stephen Moffat felt it was important to keep the 50 plus years of Doctor Who history relevant in the modern era of Doctor Who, and he made it happen. But Chris Chibnall and the new order of things at the BBC and the Doctor Who production team, they're focused on tomorrow. And that's okay, because in order for Doctor Who to remain on the air, it has to look forward more than it looks to the past. What makes me sad is the lack of appreciation given to Peter Capaldi, given to Stephen Moffat. Because Chris Chibnall will never be able to write a Doctor Who episode like Heaven Sent, or Extremis, or World Enough and Time, or Dark Water, Death in Heaven. Never. If you look at Stephen Moffat's work on Doctor Who, before he became in charge of Doctor Who, it's classic after classic. Two-parter in Series 1 that introduces Captain Jack. The Girl in the Fireplace in Series 2, for a long time my personal favorite Doctor Who story. The Weeping Angels of Series 3, Blink, still considered by so many the best story to introduce new viewers to Doctor Who with. Silence in the Library, two-parter, that introduces River Song in Series 4. These are all great, great stories. Chibnall's work, before he became in charge of Doctor Who, you have 42, which is like a really bad version of Satan Pit, and you have Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, and you have his best work, truly his best work, the two-parter about the Silurians in Series 5, which, by the way, was the low point of Series 5. But Chris Chibnall, he wrote Broadchurch. Yeah, he did. Broadchurch was all right, trying to figure out who killed the kid. But it's boring. It's so boring. Boring. And there's no David Tennant in Series 11 of Doctor Who. Oh, but he did Torchwood. Torchwood, dude. Torchwood. I like Torchwood. Children of Earth is an amazing series of television, but Torchwood kind of sucks on rewatches. It has very little repeat value. It's not really all that good. Chris Chibnall is a serviceable writer. And to go from Stephen Moffat, who is an amazing writer and will be appreciated more, I think, when Series 11 is over, to Chris Chibnall is a big downgrade, period. But Doctor Who isn't about Doctor Who stories anymore. It's not about the show's history. It's not really about Doctor Who anymore. It's about time and Jodie Whittaker and championing these causes for this audience that the BBC and Chris Chibnall think that Doctor Who needs to have. But these people that are super excited about Jodie Whittaker and super excited about Series 11, they don't like Doctor Who, because Series 1 through 10 was Doctor Who. Series 11 doesn't seem like it's going to be like Series 1 through 10. So you're making Doctor Who into a show that is not like Doctor Who because you want Doctor Who to grow and be popular. It just, Adric, it makes me angry. It makes me frustrated because nobody can see it. You're taking Doctor Who and turning it into something different because it's about time. So yes, I want to watch The Time of the Doctor. I want to see Peter Capaldi become the Doctor. And then I want to watch his run, because it's nuanced and it's real and it's a mix of all the Doctors and all the stories that came before. And it was brilliant. The team of Moffat and Capaldi and even Mark Gatiss, brilliant. And that was the best that Doctor Who will ever be, because the BBC and Chris Chibnall are making Doctor Who about current issues that Doctor Who can't be about. Maybe I'm wrong. Adric, I hope I'm wrong, right? He's sleeping. I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to write down that I hope I'm wrong. And I hope Series 11 is amazing. And I hope Chris Chibnall knocks it out of the park. But I know better. Stephen Moffat should have known better. And anybody over at the BBC making decisions should have watched his stories and known better. But at the end of the day, it seems the revenue, the international marketplace, the license fees, the AI index, viewership, all point to the Me Too movement and making Jodie Whittaker, the 13th Doctor, a symbol that she, as an actress, is, I'm sure, more than capable of living up to, but a character, the 13th Doctor, that is not any of those things because she's not a human being. She's an alien. Jesus. That's great, Adric. That's all I have to say about Series 11. Other than that, I'm going to reserve judgment. And I'm kind of excited. I'm not. I'm not at all. Anyway, Adric, you're a jerk. You're a real jerk. You got chocolate all over the place. That's great, Adric. It's really, really, really great. Really, it's really, really.